Orale! Bienvenidos and welcome to the Familia FFB podcast. We're on YouTube. We're doing something a little bit different today, Familia. This was recorded earlier today, but we're dropping it as a live stream. I am going to be in the chat, Familia. So make sure you throw some questions in there. I will be answering them right away. But again, make sure to give us a like and subscribe. And we're brought to you by Fantasy Points. We're a proud member of the Fantasy Points Media Group. Make sure, if you haven't already done so, I've seen that a few of you have subscribed using our promo code. Please make sure to do that. If you haven't, hey, go to fantasypoints.com. Use the promo code FAMILIA22. Or if you want to put it in Spanish, FAMILIA22. And get 10% off your subscription, including the NFL prospect, which gets 200 plus profiles from Greg Cosell, the G himself, the man when it comes to film. You got Graham Barfield, you got Tom Brawley, John Hansen, Wes Huber, and a guy you might be hearing a little bit about in a second. So let's get into our amigo, our invitado de lujo, as I love to say on Familia FFB. You know, you're going to see a pattern that we have, because last week we had Graham Barfield on from Fantasy Points Familia, and we got another member here. This is someone who has been in the media for almost 15 years. He has survived the slings and arrows of the Philly fan base, and before settling in for the long haul in the fantasy industry, he's worked for Fantasy Guru, Fantasy Free Agents, and he's one of the founders and owners, and he's the managing editor for Fantasy Points. Hey, you know what? We're all familia, right? As I love to say on the show. But yeah, he's got a couple of dogs, and I'm going to guess that they're named some combination of Doc, J. Roll, or Utley. We'll tell you why. And well, he's got Carolina on his mind, but really he's Philly through and through. You can find him at FG_Dolan. Bienvenido. Welcome in. Buen amigo. Joe Dolan. How are you, my friend?
Jorge, mi amigo. Hola, hola.
Bienvenido. Bienvenido. Todo bien, todo bien. Now, I heard on a 2020 interview. I did a little Wayback Machine with you and Dr. Edwin Porras, and you dropped a little Spanish on there. So I want you to feel plenty welcome to drop some.
Oh, I don't want to embarrass myself. No, no, definitely not. We might be going to Barcelona next year, but Spanish is different than the Spanish I was taught in America, because you know Latin America and all that stuff. So it's gonna be it'll be a lot of fun. I had some fun kind of breaking that out for sure, because in Barcelona they spoke a lot of Spanish, as you might imagine. Like, of all the places in Europe I went to, they actually spoke the least English. But no, definitely not going to be doing too much of that today. I'll leave that to you. But it's kind of funny that you mentioned my dogs and saying they're a combination of J. Roll or Utley. Well, they're not. My dogs' names are Butterscotch and Crimpet. And anybody who's from the Philadelphia area knows Tasty Cake, which is like kind of a local version of Little Debbie. And now they do some nationwide. We get them down here in South Carolina, but Butterscotch Crimpet is their signature cake. So, and they're delicious, but Butterscotch and Crimpet are my doggies. They're not here right now. Occasionally you could see them over on the couch there lounging, but they're not here right now. They decided to leave me alone for this one, but no, those are my dogs. They're my greyhounds. As a matter of fact, the reason you're recording this today is because I have to take them to the vet. So, Jorge, it's wonderful to be with you. My Phils just got back from Dodger Stadium, and only truly Philly fashion, managed to make a 3-1 series domination feel like crap, because they got walked off in the final game of the series. But that's the life of a Philly baseball fan right now.
I tell you, it was, we were going back and forth, and it was, I always kind of love, have a little fun when Dodger fans tilt early part of the season. Mm-hmm. But it was just one of those things where I just kept saying, okay, you know what, if they drop four in a row to the Phillies in September, then I'm going to complain. But no, come on, let's have some fun. And it was one of those things I kept, when after the first game, I was like, okay. And then they beat Buehler and Urias, and I was like, ooh, not gonna be fun. I tell you, your boys can hit. Your boys can hit and expose a couple of holes in the pitching staff that the Dodgers need to plug up, hopefully, in the next couple of months.
But Phillies still need a bullpen guy. But you mentioned, you know, you used to work for the Dodgers.
I was their publications director for 8 years.
You were there in 08 and 09.
Oh yes, I saw okay. Matt Stairs. I saw Matt Stairs. I had a great seat and shed a little bit of a tear for that one. Go ahead.
So the funny part about that home run was, and I don't want to give you bad memories here, but the funny part of that home run was he hit it so hard that watching it on TV, I thought he swung and missed. Like I couldn't see the ball leave the bat. And then the next year, I was actually at game 4 in Philly when it was so obvious that Jonathan Broxton wanted nothing to do with Stairs and he walked him. And then Jimmy Rollins hit the ball into the gap. And then that was probably the single most exciting. The game up until that inning was actually pretty boring. Like Joe Blanton started and gave up a couple of runs. Who homered for the Dodgers?
I think it was Kemp.
Might have been Kemp who homered for the Dodgers. And then it just like the Phillies just didn't get anything going until that inning. Anyway, that was a game. I think I caught the swine flu at that game, actually. You remember the swine flu?
Oh, yes. Yeah,
I was deathly sick for like a week. But yeah, that was worth it. I would catch the swine flu again for that game.
And I remember that at bat with, where J-Roll just kept fouling off. And Broxton just kept throwing 99, 99, 99. And I just kept, I had that horrible feeling up and down because that was J-Roll's, that was his prime years. And it's like, in a game on the line, I don't know who you'd want more up rather than him, even if it was Matt Stairs. But man, it was just one of those tip of the cap. I actually thought the 08 team had a better shot because they were hot and Manny just wasn't missing anything. As they say, you had the pitching and the Cole Hamels tip of the cap, but cost me a World Series ring. So
I sincerely apologize.
I laugh. You don't have to apologize. I laugh about it now. I gave Davey Lopes a hard time enough about it when he came back and coached for the Dodgers a few years later. So that one has been buried.
Yeah, Davey was a huge part of those championship teams for the Phillies. No doubt about it.
One of these days, I'll give you a great Davey story from his playing days that he shared with me.
I would love to have that.
I'll give you that one. But I know we got to get you to the vet at some point. We're going to talk a little bit about football. But I wanted to ask, I kind of talked about, the time of the year it is. We're mid May now. One of the tried and true axioms is the haze in the barn. Mm-hmm. There are very few free agents that haven't been signed. All the players are in there, but this is a very important time in fantasy football analysis. For you personally and for fantasy, what are we kind of looking forward to? Because the content I tell you is as strong as ever.
Yeah, I mean, look, we have coming down the pike like a really huge kind of change, and we're entering a space that we're entering a space where we're trying to expand to a legitimate, like, industry-changing kind of space for us. Like, my dream since I started working at Fantasy Guru was to have everything kind of proprietary. That's been my dream, but like, you need to have the right people to do that, right? You can't just say, oh, I want everything to be proprietary on my website and do it myself. And what I mean by proprietary is the stats that we want to use for, Scott Barrett's XFP, Graham Barfield's yards created, John Hansen's projections and all that stuff. We want that to be native to Fantasy Points. And there's only one way to do that, and that's hiring people. Like, we're going to have an announcement later in the summer, but we're really expanding into data. And we want it to be the place where people can go for fantasy football data that's going to make them better players. We already have an optimizer that's proprietary, and we're working on that. We're improving it, okay? We were a fledgling company. we launched 2 years ago, right when a global pandemic, you know, like, I remember people saying to us, like, oh, you know, you're expecting me to pay for this during the pandemic. Dude, I didn't plan on that. It wasn't like, you know, I saw like Rudy Gobert catch COVID and then like text John Hansen and Graham Barfield and Brawley and be like, hey guys, let's start a company. You know, the wheels were turning a long time before that. But we were fledgling and now we're expanding and, you know, we're taking some risks here. But our data package, I think, is going to make us much more ubiquitous. Like, my whole thing was like this little thing on my hat, this little point here with the flame. I want people to know where that comes from. Like, I want people to say, oh, I know that, I can trust those guys. And, you know, we're expanding into the data realm. And I think we've got the right people to do that. You stay tuned this summer. And, you know, I think it's going to make us all better fantasy players and all better content creators.
No, I think so. And I tell you, you know what, I've always loved being associated with great brands, whether it's been established brands. But I mean, when Edwin talked to me about possibly, you know, putting in to become a part of the media group, I thought, wow, I mean, that's some names that are in there. So love to be a part of it. And I just love to have any piece and to be able to, you know, kind of keep pushing this boulder up, because I know it's a competitive industry out there, but man, gosh, it's going to be, it's fun to be a part of the cool kids. And, I'm still, expecting to be at Canton. So hopefully we get to share a beer.
Oh,
in there
I will, enjoy. I'll see you there. If you're going to be there, I just booked my flight. I mean, dude, travel is so expensive, by the way. Good.
Adios mio.
God. I mean, yeah. Dios mio. Like, good God, I guess. Yeah. I know that one. Believe me, I know that one. I went to Catholic school too. So, en el nombre del Padre y el Hijo. You know, I went to Catholic school. You said you were a Catholic school survivor too.
Yep.
I'm a survivor. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I actually learned that one first before, because my parents spoke Spanish exclusively at home. Before I learned the English version. So awesome. Oh, and speaking of which, before we get into some football, I understand you're now a member of the Cloth in the great state of California, in my home state. Yeah. Most Reverend, can I call you Padre?
Please do. Por favor. I have been ordained by the Universal Life Church in beautiful Modesto, California. I actually have a band that you can see back there. The Hold Steady is a band. They actually have a song called Modesto Is Not That Sweet. I don't know. I've never been to Modesto. Can you tell me if it's sweet or not?
It's a farm town, so it doesn't smell too sweet.
Okay. So like, I guess the song is about how like a girl packs up and moves to California and she views it as like this like life-changing experience. And then the narrator of the song finds out she's moving to Modesto. So he's like, Modesto's not that sweet. Like you picture California and you picture LA and you picture Tupac Shakur and, you know, like, you know, and, yep. And no, that's not
beaches, surfboards, yeah. Everything. Yes.
But no, yeah, I guess Modesto is not that sweet. But by the Universal Life Church in beautiful Modesto, California, I am now a man of the cloth. I'm going to be the officiant at my sister's wedding. I've actually already done it once, but I didn't have to be ordained for that because my friend and his wife were actually already married. And I just kind of was the head of the ceremony. Like they did it. So they got married by the justice of the peace. But then I just kind of headed the ceremony, but this one's the real deal. So I'm actually flying up to Pennsylvania next week to do that. So I am now, yes. And I actually get emails from like the Universal Life Church and like Reverend Dolan, like, and I was like, oh yeah, I guess I am. I am an ordained minister.
Oh man. Well, we'll call you Rev. If I call you Rev a couple of times, I hope you don't mind.
I would love that.
Well, I wanted to, you know, talk a little bit of a little football. You know, in our short time that we have left, we've got, you know, there's been a lot of talk about strategies coming up. And one of the things that I've seen a lot and is kind of that greater invasion of wide receivers in the first couple of rounds, especially the first round. And I kind of, there's a part of me that wonders if this is an overreaction to the running back injuries and the missed games in 2021, or could this be a market correction of what that's been kind of coming for a while, kind of the people are really adopting that hero RB approach.
Yeah. I mean, I think it is kind of a reaction to all the injuries, but it's also a reaction to, you know, how teams use their running backs. I mean, I think you can make the argument that the best runner in football, maybe with the exception of Jonathan Taylor, is Nick Chubb. And Nick Chubb's a second round pick because he doesn't get usage in the passing game. And they have Kareem Hunt who does all that. And, you know, I think it's just a reaction to how teams are using, you know, you're not, Minnesota is not going to be playing Justin Jefferson 70% of the snaps, you know, like, you know, they're not, the Rams aren't going to be spelling Cooper Kupp with Ben Skoranek, you know, that stuff doesn't happen, you know? So, and you get these high impact targets, and I think it's fair. And then, you know, I think part of the reason is people are looking for reasons to poke holes in running backs. They don't do that as much with wide receivers. And of course injuries play into that. Running backs do get injured. Running backs have shorter shelf lives. And you know, the irony is our teams extending shelf lives of running backs by doing this, but also making them a little bit more annoying for fantasy. But you look at the guys going in the second round, Kamara, all right, he might have a legal issue. You've got Nick Chubb, who obviously has Kareem Hunt. You've got Leonard Fournette. Oh, is he older and he was injured at the end of last season? Saquon Barkley. Oh, my God, we can go on for years about, you know, the issues with his injury. So I think it's kind of justified. And you also look at the influx of some of the wide receiver talent, you know, Jefferson and Chase. Cooper Kupp's coming off like an all-time great season. Devontae Adams, who I think is probably on the back end of that first round because of the trade. But no, I think there are just fewer holes to poke with these guys. And, you know, this is the position where these kind of young generational guys have come out and have shown up. You know, Saquon Barkley was that, and then he got hurt. Christian McCaffrey was that, and then he got hurt 2 years in a row, you know? So Saquon obviously didn't have a great year with injuries this year either. So no, I think it's fair. You know, if Jonathan Taylor gets hurt this year, he's going to fall to the end of the first round next year, you know, yeah. But I mean, that's not stopping people from taking Taylor 1-1, you know, it's not just when the running back's there, who does it, the fantasy players will draft that guy, but they want to see it first now from these guys. You know, keep in mind these wide receivers who were going in the first, Jamar Chase was like a seventh or eighth round pick when all was said and done last year, because he dropped a couple passes in the preseason. So I think people do just kind of want to see it here.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you talked about Jefferson, his rookie year. I mean, some leagues he was a free agent pickup after week, you know, week two, week three.
And, like, I think that was, like, using the NFL and the Eagles outsmarting themselves. Almost it fooled us all. Because the Eagles are like, all right, everybody's wondering, okay, can Justin Jefferson, who played almost exclusively in the slot at LSU, can he line up and win on the outside? Okay, the Eagles told you they didn't think so, because they went out and drafted Jalen Reagor. So you're like, oh man, you know, maybe the Vikings are just going to get this big slot receiver and he's the next coming of Jordan Matthews. And it just wasn't the case. The Eagles outsmarted themselves and outsmarted all of us, because we were taking, I can't even believe it, but like, I mean, we were taking Jalen Reagor over Justin Jefferson for fantasy his rookie season. I mean, I know that sounds ridiculous, but hey, look, the Eagles did it too. You know, like they've had a much better offseason the last couple of off seasons, but that was not one of them. So yeah, like a lot of these rookie receivers, you know, maybe next year we're looking at Treylon Burks being like an eighth, ninth round pick for fantasy. And we're like, man, we were dumbasses. Like, you know, he had the opportunity. He had the talent, and we just didn't buy in. So, you know, one of these rookie receivers is going to pop this year. It's just a matter of what.
I know. I'm going to keep trying grabbing a bunch of them in best ball just to kind of see what the ADP looks like, and just, and then different teams in the redraft season. So just to see which one happens, and hopefully one of them comes through. But because, yeah, it's hard to know which one's going to pop because the opportunity is just different all around. And you know what? Last year, a big thing, you know, speaking of opportunities, people were really talking about the premium tight end as a draft strategy, grabbing that early tight end. And, you know, and this year I'm looking around and people are talking about it less, but then I'm looking around. Travis Kelce and Mark Andrews seem to have added targets that are coming their way. Kyle Pitts is going into year two. His hype is definitely going up. And then Darren Waller, I mean, that's going to be a more pass happy team. George Kittle, rookie quarterback. Are we sleeping on that strategy this year?
Industry? I'm much more into it. Like, and maybe this is just recency bias for me, but Mark Andrews was my most valuable fantasy player across the industry last year. I'm talking best ball. I'm talking redraft. You know, he was my most valuable guy. And, you know, I'm in on Kyle. I've drafted Kyle Pitts more already this year than I drafted him all of last year. Like, last year as the rookie, I was like, ew. And it's kind of funny that I'm doing that because now he got a downgrade at quarterback, right? I mean, yep. Like, say what you want about Matt Ryan, Marcus Mariota or Desmond Ridder is a significant downgrade at quarterback. So I'm in on Kyle Pitts. I actually kind of prefer Andrews to Kelce, but, you know, I think you're fine either way. And the thing that's unique about those three guys, in comparison to Kittle, although Kittle could have joined this group, in comparison to somebody like Kittle or Darren Waller or Dallas Goedert, those three guys, Andrews, Kelce, and Pitts, all lost their top target competition this offseason. Obviously, Marquise Brown, the Baltimore Ravens, Jorge, believe this or not, the Baltimore Ravens had two of the top 10 receivers in all of football in targets last year. The Baltimore Ravens, Mark Andrews and Hollywood Brown. Well, Hollywood Brown's gone. Obviously, Tyreek Hill's gone. Kansas City's got all kinds of guys now to replace them, but they're essentially taking a shotgun method, right? Like, they're like, all right, we'll see if Sky Moore can do it. We'll see if Valdez Scantling can do it. Maybe Hardman will finally do something with his life. You know, like, they've got guys, Juju, but none of them are Tyreek Hill. And then, of course, you know, apparently Calvin Ridley was watching this podcast and decided to put a couple bets down, and we know what happened there in Atlanta. And on top of Calvin Ridley, Russell Gage is gone. So now you've got these three guys who I think are by far their team's top projected targets. And you know, they were last year too, but now it's by far those guys are. And I'm in on drafting those guys in the first three rounds.
Yeah, those guys are crazy. I'm worried that the Pitts, by the time August, that the Pitts hype is going to be so high that it's just going to that it's going to make him too hot to draft at that point. So that's just, he's the only one that's worrying me a little bit about that. The other ones, gosh, I mean, Kelce, Andrews, oh. Give me those guys. Kittle, I had him on a couple of teams last year. I really had him, and he just it's not his fault. He's just so good at run blocking.
Yeah, but also, you know, here it's funny because, like, how our brains work with this elite tight end. Mark Andrews was my most valuable, was my fantasy MVP. Either him or Jalen Hurts, but Hurts faded a little bit down the stretch because of the injury. You know, my LVP for fantasy was last year, Darren Waller. Because I drafted Waller a ton. So you can look at that two ways. We're like, okay, I paid up for this elite tight end in Mark Andrews, and I had a guy who I could trust every week, whether it was Tyler Huntley playing quarterback, whether Lamar playing quarterback, whoever. I think they had Josh Johnson for a game. No, those guys went to Mark Andrews, and they went there consistently. And then Darren Waller, he had the huge week one game. Remember the Monday night doubleheader? He had the huge game, and I'm like, oh, my God, this guy's going to catch 150 passes this year. And it just didn't happen. Then he got hurt. And then – so he was my LVP. And, like, so I'm looking at the elite tight end as kind of maybe it's a boom or bust strategy. And I think when you take a guy that early at one position – that doesn't even have the impact, you might say, of, like, the quarterback in terms of total points. It can hurt you too.
Yeah, I think those guys. I really liked. I really liked the first, the top three we talked about. Adding in the other two, but there are definitely some, you know, some warts on the other two. You know, and you had a very interesting interview last week with Liam Murphy, the $1 million best ball champion.
He won Best Ball Mania. Yeah.
Oh, I mean, it just. And it was very enlightening hearing that, also that just what a regular duty is. But one of the things that really struck me was, you know, kind of what Scott talks about with, you know, upside wins championships, focusing on week 17. From that conversation, that really opened my eyes a lot. But for you, in that conversation, was anything that kind of stuck out to you on that one?
Yeah, I mean, that was something that I never even like considered for like best ball. You know, we always do like strength of schedule analysis and like, oh, these playoff weeks are great, but I never even really crossed my mind stacking just like a super high profile, you know, week 17 game and like using that to kind of catch up and take down a big tournament. I never even really considered that. And then it's funny, we did that interview, and then just like 2 hours later, the schedule comes out, and what do we have? Monday night, week 17, Buffalo, Cincinnati. Maybe the fantasy game of the year is the final game of the fantasy season. Like, I mean, come on. Like, how perfect could that be? Like, so no, I thought that was a really interesting takeaway. And I also, you know, he also employed some strategies that I never thought a sharp best ball player would employ. Four quarterbacks, four tight ends, you know, or four tight. I don't think he would ever do it on both teams, but even some teams where he drafted one quarterback. And like, man, on the teams I've done that, it's when I would like fall asleep and miss my pick, you know, like I didn't know that that was a viable strategy. So it was really interesting to get into somebody else's head there. About that, but I know that Bills Bengals game. As soon as I saw that, I was like, "Oh my God!" There's going to be people who have like a 50-point lead in their championship final, and then realize that there's three players from that game on your opponent's team, and you were just going to get sick to your stomach.
Oh, and the other thing is the Sunday night game is Rams Chargers in the, you know, in the dome. So you know there's going to be some points scored on that. I mean, it seems
Oh
like every
yeah.
Sunday night game that every primetime game that happens there's just a ton of points scored at SoFi. So that one's going to be fun. I don't care how much they've upgraded their defenses. There's going to be some points scored in that game.
Yeah, the Rams on the road in that game, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. The world champions.
They were actually the road team in the Super Bowl, right? But
that's
they
right.
got to keep their locker room,
Mm-hmm.
which. Yeah, I thought that was interesting. But and I think the reason they were able to do that though is because there's two home locker rooms,
Right. The Bengals went into the Chargers locker room,
right?
so it just worked out that way.
Yeah, they didn't have to get the crappy locker room, right? I get
Yeah, exactly. The high school locker room.
Yeah.
But so we got a little bit, but there were some kind of positions that he talked about, because in the town halls that the Fantasy Points town halls that have come out, which I think have been incredibly enlightening. I mean, all you guys, I mean, especially having, you know, Greg Cosell, Adam Kaplan, I mean, just, and having all the fantasy minds on one screen is just is incredible. One that stuck out to me, and it kind of, when we talked about this, I wanted to kind of pull on that thread a little bit. You talked about Dalvin Cook being a guy that you're really heavy on because of the new offense. I wanted to see if we could kind of go through if there's a guy, you know, one or two guys at each of the positions. You could start with Cook, and then we could go to quarterback,
yeah.
and then tight end, wide receiver.
Oh, well, I know there's you wanted to be like vis-a-vis ADP. My quarterback one isn't really that, but I'll explain that. But yeah, Dalvin Cook, I think if you've heard me this offseason, he's one of those guys I think people might have injury fatigue on. And, but I also am looking at a guy who the overall RB1 is in his range of outcomes. I think he fits like a glove in the new offense, which is a zone based offense. There's reports he's playing a little bit of receiver at minicamp. I'll file that away,
yeah.
you know, but I know he can catch the ball. And I'm just looking at it like even in 13, 14 games, this guy could be a legitimate league winner for you. You know, it's a team that didn't do a whole lot at wide receiver. I think they drafted I wanted to say Ezunkama, but no, he went to Miami. They drafted Jalen Naylor. They drafted him from Michigan State, and that was really all they did. You know, Adam Thielen, another guy, by the way, who I was all prepared to be all out on this year, and now his ADP is dipped to like the 7th, 8th round, and they didn't really do anything at receiver. But Dalvin Cook, I think, has got an opportunity to really just fit like a glove in this offense. It's a great play action offense. Kirk Cousins is a really good play action passer. Everything's built around that outside zone run game. And I think Dalvin Cook's going to be excellent in this offense. So, yeah, I mean, I think Dalvin Cook's a great consolation prize to Jonathan Taylor. If I want to take a running back in the first round and I have a back half of the first round pick, Dalvin Cook's a guy I will definitely be rostering quite a bit.
Yeah, people forget that, you know, when Christian McCaffrey had that breakout year, you know, had that breakout 100 reception year, Dalvin Cook was not far behind him as far as, you know, fantasy points per game that season. And it's still there. And this is the offense that made Todd Gurley, running back one in 2017, and would have been repeat if he hadn't missed the last two games of the fantasy season. So I look at him. Big ups. He's still going to be just 27, which, you know, we're being ageist in the fantasy industry. I think, no, come on. He's got a year left in him. Your quarterback, I thought, was an interesting call.
Yeah. It's Trevor Lawrence. And, I've been kind of drafting him at like his ADP QB 18. But let me just put it this way about how I think the industry, and this is just anecdotal, so take this with a grain of salt, but I was just in a mock for a startup dynasty draft. It was a mock. We're not playing it out. Malik Willis went ahead of Trevor Lawrence.
Oh, God.
Are we really doing this? That's an ideal meal. Yeah, are we really doing this? Like, look, he had an awful situation with maybe the least competent coach we have ever seen in the National Football League. Say what you want about Doug Peterson. The guy's a professional coach, okay? They went out, they got Christian Kirk. Again, all right, did they overpay him? Sure. But Christian Kirk, they brought in Zay Jones, Evan. He at least has some weapons now. They improved the offensive line with the center they took, although I actually would have preferred them to take, like, Evan Neal or Charles Cross, number one, you know, one of those tackles. But now I just think Trevor Lawrence is going to have a big step forward just because he's not playing on a sinking ship right from the get-go. I mean, he got on the Titanic after it hit the iceberg, Jorge, all right? Like, Doug Peterson came through on the Carpathia and he just picked him up. Like, I mean, he's getting a second chance, a second lease on life, okay? And it hasn't been 84 years. He's going to have an opportunity to come out there and play, and I think he'll show his talent this year. I like him as a QB2. He's a QB2. That's what he's getting drafted as. But I'll take him as an upside guy behind somebody. Maybe I take a Tom Brady or something, and I want an upside backup. Well, yeah, maybe I take Jalen Hurts. I want an upside backup. Okay, Trevor Lawrence is the guy I think you can do that with.
Yeah, and he's got sneaky rushing ability too. So and he played every game, did not get hurt, you know, just unlike some of the other rookies. So him is, I agree with him. He's I love the year two. In fact, I'm gonna have some articles. I did a year two series earlier in the offseason. I'm gonna have some articles come out of that, and I love him as a possibility. As you mentioned, a QB2. How about on the wide receiver?
There's two guys who I just think, number one, Rashad Bateman. Look, Marquise Brown had 140 plus targets last year. And their other wide receivers are Devin Duvernay and Tylan Wallace. And, you know, there's a lot of opportunity there for Rashad Bateman. And then I just had like kind of an epiphany when I was, and this is not going to be, by the way, in any way a hot take, because everybody's talking about him this offseason, but I was watching some like highlights and some games from last year when I was just sitting on the couch with a glass of whiskey a couple nights ago. And I texted the guys at Fantasy Points and I'm like, look, I know his ADP is going to be high because everybody's on him, but I don't want to miss on Gabriel Davis.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't want to miss. Like, I don't want to look at this situation and be like, this is not to compare them to two Hall of Famers, but like, there was the moment when there was the passing of the torch from Jerry Rice to Terrell Owens. And I don't want to miss the chance that happens. I don't want to miss that. Like, And not to say I'm in on Stephon Diggs. I think he's a fine second round pick, but Gabe Davis in the fifth or sixth round, when I think he's got an opportunity to be a big time receiver, I'm not going to miss on that. I would, if I take a swing for the fences and I strike out there, so be it. Like, but he fits the profile. He just fits the profile of a guy who finishes like as wide receiver six. And you're like, oh yeah, we should have seen that coming.
Everything is pointing toward him. I mean, the quarterback, I mean, it's the offense. It's just perfect. It's just absolutely perfect. Mine was Russell Gage, but I've talked about him a lot.
I love him, by the way. And yeah, I had a tweet about him a couple of months ago and before the AJ Brown trade, where I was like, who would you rather have, Robert Woods as Tennessee's wide receiver two or Russell Gage as Tampa's wide receiver three? The poll was 50-50, but I'm like, my answer was Gage the whole way. Like, I'd rather have Tampa's wide receiver three than Tennessee's wide receiver two.
Exactly. Yes. And he may be the wide receiver two in that, you know, because Godwin's I don't think Godwin's coming back. Edwin and I had a nice talk in March that I'm going to have an article coming out on that, on the late season ACLs. But you got time for one fun one.
I do have time for one fun one.
So, you know, I know you meant you're in Carolina, Philly blue and blue though. What is more revered in its respective region, Philly cheesesteaks in Philadelphia or Carolina barbecue?
Carolina barbecue, because I think you'll even get Philly people who are like, well, I prefer the roast pork sandwich. That's how you know you're really elite. Or, you know, cheesesteaks are overrated. They're kind of similar from place to place. Now, I think Carolina barbecue is probably a little bit more revered. I just went and got a place from a Philly cheesesteak here. It was actually really good. I had to drive a half an hour to get it. But they're from Philly. It was actually really good. But like, I mean, I think Carolina barbecue probably as a culinary item is actually of higher quality than a Philly cheesesteak. Don't think I'm talking down though, because I love me a cheesesteak. Like I said, I drove a half an hour to go get one this past weekend.
Hey, when you need to taste a home, you need to taste a home. So, yeah. Hey, have you ever seen tacos involved in either one of them?
No. One place does do Carolina barbecue tacos here. Now, have you ever heard of a Philly taco?
No.
Okay. So a Philly taco is a Philly cheesesteak wrapped in a slice of Lorenzo's pizza.
Oh my God.
Which is like a huge ass slice of pizza. So that's a Philly. I've never had one, but that's a Philly taco. You know what I've also come to and I know I have to get going. My wife's going to yell at me here soon. I actually like have really my palate like for like the Americanized tacos, like how tacos have become so, you know, kind of an artisan food, and like people are putting like tempura shrimp in them and stuff like that. I have really developed a taste for just an authentic Mexican taco on a corn tortilla with just like, and I don't know, there's just something about it. Like the seasoning of the filling is just so much better. Edwin was so proud of me when I texted him that, because I don't like cilantro. But on that, I don't know why it works. But yeah, I've really developed a taste for that. And they actually have some authentic places around here. And I prefer them now to like all the artisan tacos, like a Philly cheesesteak taco, for instance.
Yeah, the Philly cheesesteak taco sounds like something you can't eat for till the next day or something like that. So you're good for a while. Yeah, we get to send some authentic tacos down South Florida way. Yeah, the Edwin's really struggling for some. Oh man, yeah, South Florida, it's all that Cubano food. So, which is still good, but yeah, when you miss your tacos, you miss your tacos. So, mi amigo, this has been, as we like to say in Espanol, un gran placer. Let's take you home. You talked a lot about what's coming up on Fantasy Points. Anything else you might dot the I's or cross the T's?
Yeah, I think we're going to be doing a lot more work with our YouTube channel this season. So just stay tuned for that on my Twitter feed at FG_Dolan. I have an idea for that, and I'm going to be heavily involved with that. And, you know, I'm taking a step back in writing to try to focus on editing and maybe a little bit of multimedia. So that's where you're going to see my work.
Awesome. Well, familia, also let's make sure if you go to FamiliaFFB.com. Use that promo code Familia22, get you 10% off. And follow me at JorgeMartin17. Also, special thanks to YouTube for putting our podcast out there. Please make sure to give us a like and subscribe, por favor. And also special thanks to Anchor for being our hosting network, putting our podcast on Apple, Google, and Spotify. Original content, FamiliaFFB.com. Everywhere else, go to FamiliaFFB, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or me at JorgeMartin17. Otra vez, big thank you to our invitado de lujo, Padre José. but everybody, remember, todos somos familia. Salud.